Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode's an interesting one. It's me best mate. It's me best mate of 40 plus years. It's me best mate, so that means there's probably going to be a little bit of effing and jeffing in this episode. Because by the very nature of his art and his name, it's going to involve some swearing, because today's guest is Cunt and the Gang. For those of you that are maybe unaware of the work of Cunt and the Gang and now the Cunts, his band, he is a one-man comedy musician that has spent the last 10, 15 years touring hard, releasing albums and albums and albums, and just, yeah, making thousands of people laugh on the regular. And yeah, fiercely proud to have watched this all unfold and happen. And I'm looking forward to having a chat with him today. And maybe be surprised by some of his song choices, because it's going to be very interesting having that conversation with a guest when, I guess, lots of the kind of pivotal moments of growing up together and clubbing and things like that, we was always shoulder to shoulder. And, you know, in all of our creative endeavours through bands and DJing and stuff, we've always kind of been, you know, working alongside each other. So yeah, it's going to be a really interesting one. We have a couple of beers as well, which is nice. So yeah, I think you're in for a treat. Obviously, we talk about last Christmas's campaign with the Cunts that saw them storm into the top five of the Christmas charts, which was just amazing and insane. And we talk about the current campaign to do that all over again. If you like hearing Cunt having a natter, then I can't recommend enough that you go over and listen to this week's episode of Distraction Pieces, where Cunt and Pip have a big chat as well. That's a wonderful listen, so go check that out as well. A few thank yous as well. So thanks to Scroob and everyone at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to you lot for, as we approach Christmas, and at the end of another year of just supporting this podcast, you know, throughout 2021, thank you so much. Like, you know, I love doing this, and the fact that, you know, people listen and enjoy it is such a bonus. Thanks to 76 for producing this, and this episode's dedicated to Cunt's dad. So yeah, this one goes out to him. And that's all I have to say, apart from, please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the wonderful Cunt and the Gang. Sorry, I've interrupted the podcast, but with good reason. Hotel Chocolat are our sponsors. You know that now because I tell you about it every episode. But they've been super kind now. And you may have heard me talking about the products from the Cacao Bar. And there's gins, cream liqueurs, all sorts of wonderful chocolatey goodies. And what they've done is they've set a page up on the website that you can go to. And all you've got to do is, just for you Off the Beaten Track listeners, go over there, answer a question, and you could win the full range delivered to your front door. I mean, that's kind of them. All you have to do is go to this place, hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. That's OTBT as in Off the Beaten Track podcast. hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. Go get your grubby little mitts on some deliciously chocolatey drinks, courtesy of our sponsors, Hotel Chocolat. I'll get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we are recording. I should also say, before we do this, there's going to be some...
I'm all right.
There's going to be some effing and jeffing because, well, I've got to refer to you today as cunt.
And, go, and, but...
Well, like, yeah, I'm going to for the purpose of the podcast. But, I mean, this is going to be a strange recording because, I mean, I know I've had Pip on and Chris and other mates, but I've not known them their whole life. And I've known you since, well, we've been mates 40 years.
Yeah.
Hence why we do a podcast together about our 40 years of friendship. So I'm looking forward to this. And so I guess before, what I always like to do is just sort of cast my mind back over lockdown and just ask you how you found it personally and professionally. Or creatively, not professionally. Let's say creatively.
Well, you know how I did, because we talked about walking around the field every other day.
Yeah, I mean, we did, didn't we? Because it was... I thought it was interesting that you, in hindsight, speaking to you more recently, you drew quite a lot from walking around the town that we've spent our whole lives in and realised that maybe... it ain't necessarily where you want to be.
Yeah, I sort of... I don't know whether it just reinforced the fact that I've just seen every single inch of it.
Yeah.
Over the years, and... I don't know whether I've just become one of those old bastards.
Right.
That just kind of sees everywhere and just goes, well, that ain't quite as nice as it used to be.
Yeah.
And literally the field that's at the back of my house is now an housing estate. And I do remember when it used to be all fields. We
used to play over them fields. So, yeah, I get it. And we would, you know, meet up and go for walks in lockdown. And we would struggle to find places. We would generally go to places that we probably frequented when we was growing up. And I think maybe after sort of five or six walks, we'd kind of exhausted the area.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think I'm so self-involved that I didn't consider that. Like, whereas I mean, you know, you drew on that, and you know, and since you've said that, it's definitely kind of made me have them conversations as well. And go,
I've ruined it for you as well.
Spoil it for everyone. but obviously, we can't. One of the reasons that I wanted to get you on is obviously. To talk about the current campaign that you're doing, which we'll touch upon before the end. But obviously, during lockdown, you've done your first campaign.
Yeah.
And I mean, was you surprised? I mean, we was having conversations about what you was going to do, and it all felt to me, I mean, tell me otherwise, that it was like, I've got this idea, fuck it, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
And then it was like, right, and I'll just try and do all the other stuff as it's happening.
Yeah.
And yet the success of it was remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, for something that was so seat of your pants.
And explain to listeners that might not actually know what we're talking about.
So what happened was I had this song just before lockdown. I recorded a punk album with my sort of new punk band called The Cunts, with a K, so that's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we recorded it before lockdown and were sort of mixing it remotely after the first lockdown. And one of the songs that was kind of added to the album after we locked down was, you know, as a kind of afterthought to the album, was called Boris Johnson is a Fucking Cunt. And after the album went up on Spotify, I think I put it up on Spotify in July or maybe start of August. At the end of September, Ginger from the Wild Arts tweeted a link to Boris Johnson is a Fucking Cunt. With the words Christmas number one, ? And I mean, I hadn't thought about releasing a single from the album because the album was just kind of part of my old book Kickstarter that I did sort of, you know, the previous year. And that sort of sowed a seed of, oh, hold on a minute. Because I did sort of two chart campaigns sort of back in 2010 and 2011, yeah. Like with Cunt and the gang, you know, mm-hmm. with sort of the, you know, electronic stuff. And so it just sowed the seed of the idea about maybe doing it again. And first thing I did was rung up John Malter, who did the Rage campaign, who we both know, mm-hmm. Back in 2009. And he sort of heard the song and saw Ginger's tweet and sort of said, well, mate, it could happen. And then at the end of October, Charlie Brooker sort of out the blue tweeted about it as well. And, you know, you think, well, maybe it could happen. And I still didn't really think anything about it. But, yeah, sort of at the start of December, I thought, oh, fuck it, do you know what? I'm just going to go for it. And I was doing, like, weekly broadcasts over lockdown called Corona Club, you know, yeah. to sort of 200 or so people. And people were quite infused about the idea about doing something. And it just sort of snowballed from there.
And then Boris cancelled Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, when Boris cancelled Christmas, that was halfway through the week of release. And it was already showing in the midweeks at like number 19. Mm. And that really was just the thing that kind of got it over the line. And because there was, you know, because there was such consternation about, you know, he'd distinctly promised that we were all going to get Christmas with our families. And then to take it away at short notice, it was just an awful thing, you know, which kind of left me rubbing my hands together thinking, brilliant, I'm going to have a hit single.
And it feels very out of character for Johnson to sort of promise something and then deliver something completely different. That must have been quite a shock.
Well, I think it was a shock for everyone. He's just not that kind of guy, is he?
Well, look, we'll pick up on the new campaign as the podcast unfolds a little bit. But I want to ask you first to tell me, please, the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
Right, I had a couple of nearly went for it, and then kind of just went for this one. Do you want me to do the nearlies first?
Or? Get some honourable mentions in.
So the honourable mentions: Blondie's Atomic, but the you know not the kind of single that starts off with down now now. Although that is great for it to come straight in, but the down now now down now now. Just like you just know what's coming, and then when it bursts in, that's fucking brilliant. And, yeah. Teardrop Explodes Rewold is...
I thought that's what you was going to go for.
I mean, it's just so no-nonsense. It ba, 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 ba. Like, and it's just straight in, like, no-nonsense. And another one, Stan Ridgway's Camouflage, which I just love. It's not an instant one, but it just, like, the tone of the music just sets the flavour that something here is going to go on.
You love a bit of Ridgway, though, don't you?
I do love a bit of Ridgway. I mean, like, I don't think I've picked Ridgway for any of the categories today. I was desperately trying to shoehorn him in somewhere. I just love Stan Ridgway so much.
What are you going for?
Well, I've gone for the Pet Shop Boys, It's a Sin.
How does that start?
And then,
oh, yeah.
And then down to the kind of cinematic... Like
choiry kind of.
Epic kind of string choir.
Yeah.
And then as that's going... With a kind of almost inaudible voice going over. That you can't quite work out what they're saying. And then it kind of dies down. And then there's that thunderclap. Yeah, and then it's just straight in with the playover, just the verse melody. Yeah. And, yeah, it's just like, it's so many different bits and, like, takes you up and brings you down and takes you up again.
Yeah. It's a belter of a song, isn't
it? It's a fantastic song. I'll listen to it again today just to kind of, you know, just to make sure. And, it's just fucking a brilliant, brilliant song. And the thing that I found out today is the chorus fits my template. My chorus template, right, which I use, like, I've inadvertently used for about 20 songs, which is sing the title, repeat the title, something else of varied length, sing the title again. It's a sin, everything I've done, it's
have a
sin.
Have a wank. Yeah, I see what you're saying. But, I mean, we'll talk about songwriting a bit now as well, because... You know, aside from the fact that you're more known for the comedy side of music, It's all bred out of an obsession with pop music, right?
I love pop music, and I just love. I mean, that's my favourite thing, is just sitting at the computer writing songs, and the kind of the zone you get into when you're having ideas. I love it a bit.
Yeah.
But sadly, you know, I've been known for wanking and crying, so it's ruined the chances of that. But
I mean, we'll talk about school and what you wanted to be, but, you know, top five hit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, if I die tomorrow, at least I've, and last week it was a question, wasn't it, on fucking, what's it, Brad, on The Chase?
Yeah. I mean, explain how did you just get inundated with people?
Someone WhatsApped me, said, with a clip of it, and it was like, what protest song? There was a protest song last Christmas against which politician, and the woman fucking got it wrong. But so someone WhatsApped me, and then I just went on my Twitter, and loads of people had just kind of like posted clips of it.
Brilliant.
I fucking love that, though. That it kind of just, it's gradually seeping into culture. Love it.
Just touching on songwriting a little bit more before we get on to the next track. And I want to ask, when you're writing songs, I mean, I imagine the nature of the cunts or cunt in the gang, it's about that immediate impact, not just lyrically, but musically as well. It's, you know, a lot of people have chosen on this podcast, you know, things like Wish You Were Here or Bohemian Rhapsody, and songs that have got these huge intros that what you don't necessarily seem to get too much in music anymore. The kind of the science and the formula of pop music, if you want to look at it like that as a science and a formula, but of commercial pop music, it does seem to be something that's becoming faster and shorter and more immediate. Is that your kind of go-to when you're writing a song?
I don't know. I mean, I think with a comedy song, they are slightly different. I like to stick to that, the Stock Aitken and Waterman Motown kind of format of verse chorus, middle eight, chorus in.
Yeah.
But I mean, what I like to do is try and get to the chorus, the first chorus, as economically as possible, so there's not loads and loads of waffle, but you have to use that first verse to sort of set the scene and introduce your premise. So you won't get many laughs in the first verse, because it'll be mostly like that functional thing of getting you to the chorus, and the chorus is the punchline.
Yeah.
But the intro, I always like to just suggest a little melody or something, you know, like the Wanking and Crying song.
Yeah.
I just fucking love them little earworm... that little earworm melodies, and try and pepper the songs with them.
I think, like, what you first said about, you know, kind of sort of setting the premise for the chorus as well. If you look at Fucksticks, like, like, to me, I've got that, hello, good evening, welcome, that kind of Carter, that sort of somber, like, kind of setting a little emotional kind of structure, and lulling you into this kind of, like, almost romantic vision of your granddad, before it's just like Fucksticks, and then you get the hook and the delivery of the punchline, arguably.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. What Stuart, and I don't want to fucking start name dropping, so I know that's your thing, but Stuart Lee come up and see us in Edinburgh, like, in 2011 or 12, and was very, very fucking complimentary and very lovely. But he said the thing that he liked about my stuff was the fact that it's got the repetition of pop, but the kind of surprise of comedy. And he said it's not easy to do that. Is to kind of, because with choruses are all about repetition. But I always tried with the choruses to just change something so that there was enough to kind of, so it weren't just something to sing along to. So there was another laugh kind of as you go on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think... Yeah, yeah. And so how have you found that? I mean, I went to your first gig as the cunts, and I think it's going to be imperative, I think, that you get a good sound man, because, like, any comedy song, and speaking, obviously, through being in a comedy band, you know, with Mr. Gels over the years, like, way back, however catchy your music is, if it's comedy-based, you've got to hear the lyrics, haven't you, make that cut through, because there's a delivery.
Completely makes or breaks it. I had a gig in Halifax in Yorkshire, and it was a weird night, because there was a good crowd there and everyone was fired up, but the gig just went really flat. It was just a really flat gig, and, you know, you think, fucking hell, like, it just ain't happening. And yeah. Some nights it would just be like that. It just wouldn't happen. And the sound man afterwards said, oh, here you go, mate. I recorded the set and gave us a CD. And I put it on in the car on the way home. And, like, the words were barely inaudible above the music. And you're like, oh, right, that's what it was. These people couldn't, you know, weren't they didn't find it funny. Of course they didn't, because it was excellent.
Yeah.
But they...
Arguably, you were just a bloke in a boiler suit with shit hair.
Wanking
just...
and crying. That was my tagline when I used to send to venues for gigs. Bloke in a boiler suit with shit hair, wanking and crying. You're going to book me? I'm 50 quid.
All right, well, look, let's take you back. And for track two, I'm going to ask you, please, to tell me the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Right, I've got to say...
Right.
I've sort of been thinking about this, and you think, oh, I don't know, really. And then it just fucking hit me, and I put it on in my shed earlier on, and I bawled my fucking eyes out. I just sat there crying in my shed on my own this afternoon. Same me eye. Oh, fucking hell. It just completely fucking done me.
Yeah.
Bright Eyes.
That'd do it every time.
Oh, fucking hell. It's just such a sad song. Such a fucking heartbreaking song.
What? Where do you think that comes from? The association with Watership Down?
I don't really know, because I think... Was it like 1978 it came out, I think? So I don't know... I mean, I must have heard it first with Watership Down, but I don't know whether I would have heard it in 1970 or whether it had been a couple. But it was definitely as a young kid.
Yeah.
And I suppose it must be that. But I mean, I don't know. Even hearing it without thinking of the tragic fate of the rabbits, it's a fucking heart wrenching song. The vocals are just beautiful, and it's just such a fucking great song. And I didn't realise till about a fortnight ago it was written by Mike Batt, wasn't it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I've had him on the podcast.
Oh, have you?
Yeah. He actually sat at a piano when he recorded it. So he was playing all of his songs.
I'm glad I wasn't. Like, the next one on. You remember you're a Womble
song. But, I mean, Art Garfunkel's voice is just... It's angelic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And like, and that is a beautiful song. And yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, for me, as soon as I see it, I can see the little kind of rabbits flying through the air and that kind of weird scene in Watership Down, which I think I've only ever seen once. And
we should just watch it together and have a great big cry.
Nah.
And then put Porky's on after and have a great big wank.
I just never kind of... I knowing like there's films where you know something sad's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's almost set up for it.
Yeah.
And I think if you then throw music in the mix, it just takes it somewhere completely fucking different.
Yeah.
And I think them songs, you know, as children of the 80s, like... Again, Drive the Cars. You instantly think of Live Aid and that scene, and I think, and it just enforces that kind of that melancholy, and I think that's definitely the case with Bright Eyes. So I was going to ask you where you was born, but you was obviously born in the same town as me. So you know we're Essex boys, and kind of born in a, I guess, a working class area.
Yeah.
I think I would say if I had to that you was. We both had quite, I guess, aspirational parents that kind of wanted to kind of, in the 80s, sort of knock on the doors of middle class, maybe. Is that fair enough to say?
Yeah, I think my mum's side of the family were aspirational working class, like, you know, sort of a little bit ashamed of being working class and couldn't wait to get out of it. But then my dad's family were like, you know, council house...
Yeah.
You know, old-fashioned working class, you know, and me dad's mum, like, didn't want to buy a council house and all those kind of, because thought that was having ideas above your station. But then, you know, you'd sort of gradually see this row of council houses, like, porches appearing on them and that, you know, like, down the road. But, like, me mum and dad kind of, me dad sort of was a labourer, and then he went out and started working for himself, just doing buildings, sort of in the 80s, when there was a big boom, and, you know, doing extensions and yeah, all that kind of thing.
Just sort of seeing that kind of growth in the 80s in your parents, and sort of seeing that, he just can't stop, can he?
That's fuck.
Unbelievable.
Gels. Shall I see if he rings again and we'll answer it?
Yeah, okay. That's Mr. Gels, who's the guitarist in The Cunts. He's also was also the other singer in my band, and he just can't deal with it, can he?
I think he knew I was coming round to meet you tonight, and he was worried we was going to be cunting him off.
We are now. But did you ever kind of, what did you draw from sort of seeing that kind of, you know, hard work and working for yourself? Like, did you find that, was you aware of it at the time? And do you think in hindsight it's inspired you or motivated you?
I don't think I was aware of it at the time. But I think some, you know, you just pick up on things. Because when my dad worked for himself, he did work really fucking hard. And I think that sort of instilled a work ethic in me, but also just that idea of, like, my dad sort of didn't sort of suffer fools gladly.
Yeah, I think that's a safe assumption.
And so when you came out of doing my A levels and just went into work in shops in Lakeside, you'd be working for these jumped up little fucking 5'4" despots.
Yeah,
and that's fucking Joe again.
Go on, answer it and put it on speaker.
Hi, Gel.
Hello,
Gel. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can, yeah. Was I on the phone just now to you or not?
No. I'm in the middle of recording Off the Beat and Track with Stuart.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I just wanted to say, there's no point doing it because podcasts are shit and it's shit at podcasts.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
He's not shit. He's not a shit at him. He just does a lot of them.
Yeah, he's watered it down too much, isn't he?
You're breaking up, Joe.
See you later.
Bye.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, go on, as you were saying.
I can't remember where I fucking
you were. You was talking about the fact that you weren't particularly aware of it at the time.
Yeah, yeah. So when you went into working for other people,
yeah.
I think my tolerance levels of working for other people were already low from having seen my dad be his own boss.
Yeah.
And I think I had it instilled in me about not being bossed around, you know, and especially when it was people that you just thought, oh, fucking, at school these people would have been the fuckwits.
Yeah.
And, you know, and them sort of trying to tell you what to do, and I never really liked that, and so I didn't sort of last that long at it, really.
I definitely think that kind of element of your personality definitely made me think I want to hang around with you more, because I weren't that, and And I definitely remember just thinking, oh, he's his own man. Like, he ain't bothered about the others. Like, he's just doing his thing. And, like, and if someone kind of says you can't do that, he ain't afraid to tell them to fuck off. And I remember just being, like, really impressed with that, just thinking, wow, that's quite right. None of my other mates do that.
I sound like a really insufferable cunt.
That's got to be your next name of your album. All right, well, look, staying in the formative years, let's talk school. So I'm going to ask you to tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
Right, I really didn't want to pick it. Baggy Trousers.
Right.
But I've picked it, Baggy Trousers.
You know that's the most picked answer.
Yeah, yeah, because I've listened to your podcast, like, you know, in between. I listen to it occasionally. I mostly listen to Soda Jerker. But yeah,
I knew you'd even mention Soda Jerker on here as well. Unbelievable.
I know how rolled you get. I just kind of couldn't get past it because it was such a formative song for me in, you know, in everything I've done since, you know, and got me into the idea of being in a band and writing songs and mucking about with me mates because they just looked like they were having such a fucking laugh in the video.
Absolutely.
And, I don't know. I don't think anyone has done a song about school days and just captured it so fucking perfectly, you know, because there's blokes our age and older who were all at school at the time and we're all still going on about Baggy Trousers, you know, because we was kids and it was a song that was written for us, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did you know the Inbetweeners, the working title of that was Baggy Trousers?
Oh, really?
Yeah, they changed it last minute to the Inbetweeners. Ah. It's going to be called Baggy Trousers.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It's absolutely perfect social commentary, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Every kind of little detail in that song is just like, yep, yep. Done that, yep. Remember that, yep. And it's like, it's so relatable. And it's just perfect pop. And I know that, you know, again, this is quite a strange podcast to do because I know you so well. And I know, you know, that both of us, you know, grew up loving Madness and you know, the impact that they had on us. And, like, you know, not just because for me, and, I, you know, and tell me otherwise if it's not the case for you, like, lyrically, it was just, you know, they were singing about stuff that happened in areas that we knew.
Yeah.
And they also happened to have really good melodies, hooks and you know, fundamentally brilliant pop songs.
It was both of them things, was that the songs were just so catchy. And also, the, you know, there was no bollocks or flannel or fluff or, you know, or sheen on them. They just seemed like a really fucking real prospect.
Yeah.
And that's what I liked about Madness, was just, it just seemed like a load of lads,
yeah,
having a laugh. But, you know, there was clearly some fucking magic there because, yeah, even within the different songwriting partnerships that there were in the band, they, you know, and the, obviously, like, the production team they had with Clive Langer and Alan Winstanley, just produced nugget after fucking nugget of gold.
And someone sent me, my brother sent me a video of Madness on the Whistle Test doing Night Boat to Cairo very early on.
Yeah.
And I just think, I looked at it and I just thought, God, if I was like, you know, 15, 16 then, like, that must have just been a call of arms. Like, just an absolute, like, I'm watching something special here.
Yeah.
Like, because Chaz weren't even singing Night Boat to Cairo. Suggs was singing it.
Yeah.
And, like, and it was just, oh, it was just awesome. And, yeah, and I think that, you know, I guess we grew up with that band, didn't we?
Yeah.
And,
but, I mean, when you look back at Night Boat to Cairo now, it's fucking bonkers. The idea that you'd be allowed to release a, you know, three-quarters instrumental single with a kind of Eastern flavour.
Yeah.
That just kind of finishes in this big, shouty, fucking, you know, ranty, you know, mess of noise. It's just fucking bizarre.
And so would that come out on Stiff?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, props to Stiff Records for just, you know,
I mean, props to Stiff Records anyway,
shit,
yeah.
Like that, you know, like, so tell me about school, because we didn't go to the same school. You know, we met at Cub Scouts when we was eight, or maybe younger. But you went to a separate junior school to me, like, only like half a mile apart. And then you went to a separate sort of senior school. So I just want to talk mainly about sort of secondary school, and you was the brightest of all of our gang, and I think you
that weren't hard, was it?
No, no, it really weren't.
Like the world's tallest dwarf.
Yeah, shout out Paz. but you, obviously you passed your 11 plus, and you got to go to the same school as Chris Glasson of Hardcore Listening, actually, which was like a bus ride away. And at 11 years old, how was that, I think, to get on a bus and go to a school, 15 miles away?
Yeah, I don't know,
did you know anyone there as well?
No. Like, the idea of it was quite scary before I went, and then, because you're quite adaptable at that age, like now, the idea of going anywhere where I didn't know anyone, the idea of going somewhere where I only know a couple of people, you're like, oh, fucking hell, do I have to go? I have to go? But, you're sort of quite adaptable at that age, so I just sort of got on with it, but I sort of went from being like the cleverest kid in my junior school to being like just right in the middle. And that was a weird thing, I was fucking Johnny Big Bollocks at my primary school. And then you kind of go there and you're like, fucking hell, how clever are these kids? I mean, ridiculously fucking clever kids.
And did you want to be clever?
I don't know,
is that a stupid question?
I would never ask it. I don't know, I mean I've always just enjoyed being who I am, do you know what I mean? I've never thought of myself as really clever. I'm not one of these fucking people that thinks I'm smarter than everyone else. I just fucking get on. I mean, I am, but yeah. I just fucking get on with it. But it was
the reason I asked that is because at the school that I went to, it weren't cool to be clever. It was like, if you was bright, that was almost, in the 80s sort of seen as like, oh, that's what.
Yeah, drag him over the field and kick him in.
Well, it kind of was, he thinks he's a bit special because he's clever. And that obviously certainly wasn't the case at the school that you went to.
But it's, even at the school I went to, it still weren't cool to be clever.
Yeah.
The idea that you could be clever and cool. Like, the cool kids weren't the clever ones, but then the cool kids weren't the ones who done really well. Like, the ones who did really well were the fucking clever ones who just knuckled down and stuck at it. But, you know what it's like. The cool kids, outside, once you kind of get out into the world of work, it's a fucking leveller, isn't it?
100%.
And they might still be the cool bloke down the pub, but, it don't necessarily mean they're going to do the best out of everyone, does it?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Did you know what you wanted to be when you was at school?
No, I didn't have the first fucking clue. And I sort of still don't, really. I remember doing, them fucking, you had to fill in the forms. I can't remember what they were called. With a little smiley, you had to answer all these questions.
Careers form.
Yeah. Like with a little smiley face, a little straight face, or a little sad face. and you had to answer each question with one of these. And then at the end of it, it got sent away and it come back, a little ticker tape fucking reply of what jobs you should do. And there was none. My one come back and it didn't have any on. There was just not, from my, the answers I didn't deliberately fuck it up, but from the answer I gave, there weren't any career suggestions on it. And so I just didn't know what I wanted to do. I enjoyed art and I was good at languages. So for my A-levels, I did French, Spanish and art. But, talk of going to art college and that, I don't know, I think I was just a bit young, because I was a year ahead of myself at school. So it was, I was too young to, to be able to entertain the idea of leaving home and going to university. So I just didn't do it. I just went and worked in shops and it was fucking rubbish and soul destroying.
You say that though, you felt you was young and you didn't have it in you to kind of, venture up to London. But you went to travelling, didn't you?
Are you going to mention this on every fucking podcast or do you?
We said our goodbyes and that, and you went travelling.
Yeah.
And you were going to go Europe, wasn't you? You were going to try and...
Yeah, go to Europe. I did. Yeah. Went to Europe.
Whereabouts?
France.
Okay.
Fortnite, you cunt.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. Literally didn't even touch the tread on your bike tyres. Okay. Track four. The first record you remember buying from a record store.
Now, this is a really cool one.
Okay.
Elvis Costello, Olive's Army.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
That's a brilliant record, isn't it?
It's such a good record. I mean, apart from the little M word in there, yeah, which is in context.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's just... I still think that's a perfect song for me. It's got all the fucking, you know, like the little kind of the little piano licks and the verse and the chorus. Everything's just right for
it's
me.
It's all about that piano lick, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's so good. Where'd you buy it?
The little toy and record shop up the Pride. My uncle took me up there. And, all right, I know where this is going.
No, I'm not going to take it
now. Smirk on your fucking face. He made me buy Level 42's Running in the Family as my first album. And he's smirking all over his face because he was going to bring it up in a minute. Fucking, so I might as well just admit to me war crimes, mightn't I? This is like fucking Nuremberg. Get us another beer, you cunt.
Oh, dear. So, I mean, it wasn't... What's definitely sort of presented itself over the sort of time doing this podcast is... When you sort of speak to people about where they bought their... Certainly people of sort of our age and older. Like, the places where they will buy their records, you know, Woolworths gets a regular shout-out. But there was so many toy shops and music shops that where you could go and buy a guitar and also vinyl. And obviously, literally, pretty much in between where I live now and where you live,
yeah,
there was a little toy shop. And within that, they had... A record shop, innit, which seems bonkers, but yeah, we happened to walk past it, and I'm not going to start digging you out about Level 42, but when they shut down, we went in there, and they were flogging everything. I can't even think how much we would have paid for stuff.
Yeah, like a couple of quid and that, probably. Yeah.
But I remember, I can't remember if I bought anything. I don't know if I had any money, but I do remember, like...
I think I had a fiver, and I come out there with... Level 42's Running in the Family on vinyl and Absolutely Madness on tape.
Didn't you get Wax, Bridge to Your Heart, out of there?
I might have done.
Right.
The greatest song ever written. Apart from Easy Lover.
Apart from Easy Lover.
I like Wax, Bridge to Your Heart. I do fucking still like... I know you always dig me out for it, but I fucking love it.
Does it still deliver?
Oh, it really does. I like a woe, though. That's why I like Tarzan, but I like a fucking woe.
Who was Wax? Was that one of Godley and Cream?
I think it was, yeah, it was. Was it Graham Goldman and Andrew Gold, was it?
Andrew Gold was in Wax.
Was he? Or have I just made that up?
I think if you throw anything kind of like sort of lost songs from the 70s and 80s, if you just throw Andrew Gold's name in there, he's probably involved somewhere.
Yeah. Didn't he do the theme tune to the Golden Girls?
Thank you for being...
Or is it just his name's Gold? I'm getting confused.
It sounds like an Andrew Gold song, yeah, doesn't it? Who knows? We'll Google that one later. So tell me a little bit about, you know, moving on into your sort of teens and stuff, like your relationship with buying records and not necessarily the record shop, because I mean, I know that we'd go record shopping on a Saturday.
I do just have to confess, the other record I bought that day, I bought Oliver's Army, was in the Navy by Village People.
The tune.
I was worried people might think I was too cool.
But we'd also... We spent a lot of Sundays at boot sales, didn't we? We would go and buy...
God, yes, yeah.
Like, I think we've both got sizable vinyl collections, haven't we? Yours probably...
The ceiling around my mum's is bowed, put it that way.
Really?
Oh, fucking hell. I've got so many records in her loft.
But why do you... What do you sort of equate that to? Was that just you, being somebody... Because you collect stuff, like, you know, whereas... You know, trends come and go, and I'll buy bits and bobs and then get rid of it or throw it away. You've kind of pretty much kept...
I'm a terrible fucking hoarder, a serial collector.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, I just did... I did with vinyl what I sort of do with everything. You know, like, got really. I mean, I used to listen to records all the fucking time, like you do when you're in your teens and early 20s, just always listen to records. And so just accumulated. And then sometimes you go to a boot sale and they'd have a box and you'd want five or six out of there and they'd go, "Oh, mate, take the old box for a five." You go, "Fucking brilliant."
Yeah.
And I always thought, "Oh, I'll take these, sort them out and flogs," but I never flogged them, never got around to it. So I've just got boxes and boxes of vinyl.
Top of the Pops albums from the 70s.
No, it's like 7 inches, you know, but like fucking Cool and the Gang and, you know, and all that kind of thing.
But what I find interesting is that fundamental love of the 7-inch single and collecting them. And you said that you listen to music, and both you and I never had a good stereo, did we?
No, I had like a shit old record player from the 1960s.
Yeah, like none of us either had like...
With that weird little fucking arm thing that drops another record down.
But like
with a shit needle on.
Completely. There was loads of our mates that had like, you know, a Technics Hi-Fi or like a Kenwood Hi-Fi. I was Seisho Matsui and like, you know, all the... I never had a decent Hi-Fi. But I'd rather have spent my money on buying records.
Yeah.
Do you same?
Because it was the content, wasn't it? Like I've never been a techie kind of person. Like, yeah. I mean, you know, just drive whatever fucking car gets you from A to B and whatever stereo you can fucking play your records on. Like, you know, the sound quality, I'm not worried about that. I'm just, you know.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
But with records, was you obsessive in so a couple of questions around that. So would you, if you liked a single, would you then play it again?
Yeah, I'm still like that.
For what purpose? Are you breaking it down, how it's put together?
No, just enjoying it time and time. Like, if I really like something, I just cane it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my playlist that I sort of listen to, you know, if I'm doing some DIY or when I was building me shed and what have you, it's like probably the same 50 songs. And just listen to them over and over again. Like, and, you know, probably mostly from the 80s and a couple from the 70s and a couple from the 60s.
What about if you wake up and you're feeling a bit low, do you then put on Live It Up by Mental as Anything, or do you reach for Drive by the Cars? Do you, if you're feeling a bit low or, you know, blue, do you reach for something that's somber to kind of just think, well, I'm going to listen to that and process this this feeling, or I'm going to go and stick on Mental as Anything and just, you know,
I think I'll do both. Don't think I'll just do one or the other. I lost my old man last week, and first thing I'd done was I had to drive and fucking get my new gold tooth fitted. So in the drive over, I put on Ian Drury's My Old Man, just sort of say, you know, like I'm the bloke crying at traffic lights. Yeah, I won't always have a waller. Like, I don't feel melancholy that often, to be honest. I'm pretty chipper generally. So normally, like, I normally sort of listen to upbeat stuff, although I do, you know, I do like a ballad and a wallowy ballad.
But do you not get, like, because I can definitely get, like, emotional over something, like, you mentioned a Pet Shop Boys, I'll use this as an example, right? Like, just the chord change or something that's can even be sort of euphoric will make me emotional.
Yeah.
So, the line in Suburbia, I only wanted that change when that bit comes in.
Yeah.
Oh, it, like, I'll get goosebumps and as overcome as I would listening to Drive By The Cars. Yeah. Like, you know, I think, do you know what I mean? That like you can get that from something.
Yeah, it can be, yeah, you. Yeah, it doesn't, and it doesn't even have to be a culture. I mean, I think in Bright Eyes, sort of going back to the fucking sad one, that bit that where it goes, how can the light the shines? Just that cool change there, just fucking that ticks all the boxes. But like, I tell you what, in fucking Natalie by Stephen Duffy, there's a little. It's just a little fucking drum roll, just like a little kind of brush drum roll where it goes, the gears are changing. But we're going, and that just fucking, it gets the hairs on the back of my neck going and, like, just fills me with fucking joy.
Brilliant, that, isn't it?
Oh, so good.
Yeah. Like, not just that song, but the feeling as well.
Yeah.
Like, that something, like, sonically can just have a, like, a physical reaction from goosebumps and...
But that's why music is magic. Like, it is fucking magic. And something that can just conjure up them emotions and make you feel that way. And also, like, that's why songwriting, I mean, I know what I do, it's not sort of traditional songwriting, but when I'm sat down writing a song, it's the best feeling in the world because you feel like you're creating magic, you know?
Yeah.
And I sort of heard Kevin Godley on another podcast.
Just say it.
So on Soda Jerkers, right?
Right.
But I heard Kevin Godley talking about song from 10cc talking about songwriting as sculpting air, and that really resonated because it's literally like it's like there's all these ideas floating around in the ether, and they're just waiting for someone to connect with.
Yeah.
And like if you leave yourself open to them, they find you.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I just fucking love that feeling of just fucking sitting down and creating something, or just being driving along and something comes to you.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it's just because you've heard someone else's song and you just rip a bit off it.
Yeah, but everyone does that.
Yeah.
Like, that's nature of the beast, I think. Like, being inspired by art, this creates, you know...
More art.
Yeah.
A little bit worse, but, you know.
All right. Song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
Do you know, I had a couple, I had a little think about it because there was two sorts of clubbing, weren't there?
Yeah.
There was like shit clubbing.
Right.
And then there was just
but
not...
shit clubbing weren't us going to Ibiza and raving, it was just going to like the tan club that played commercial dance music that was shit.
Yeah.
That you'd go to just to get pissed and hopefully meet a girl, right?
Yeah.
Right, there was that.
There was that, and then there was like still shit clubbing, but just not quite as shit, like the alternative clubs that we go to in, like, Southend and Romford and them kind of places. And
but we found the little nugget, didn't we? We would go to London as well, clubbing.
Yeah.
And that felt... I mean, you know, I don't want to sort of talk on behalf of you, but, you know, so much of this stuff we was doing together, and it felt when we found Automatic at the Gas Club that we'd found the little jewel in, you know, in the crown, hadn't we? We just found something really special here, and it was like, oh wow, like, this is, no one knows about this.
Yeah,
like
I wouldn't say, like, see, this is the weird thing, is like all the kind of clubs I went to and that, I never sort of felt a sense of belonging, like even in the indie clubs and stuff, and even in Automatic, but they just played all the best music. They played all the best music, and like, you know, and also, like, there's some nice Swedish girls there and stuff. So,
shout out to Nuria and Doris
and Annika.
Hello.
Oh, dear.
Right. So, with that in mind, give me some song choices.
So the shit clubbing ones were Two Unlimited's Get Ready For This, that... me and Dennis would always dance to, and we had a dance routine that we'd do to it Which, you know, sounds funny, because I must have stopped dancing in my early 20s, I think. Mm. But at some point before, I mean, I burnt very brightly for a short time before that, didn't I?
Mm.
So we had this weird fucking dance routine where it went do 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 do, and then you'd mime that you were playing a sport like tennis in between.
That's right.
like doing a forehand and a backhand in between the riffs.
Just to elaborate on that a little bit, that would generally be at about 10 p.m. on an empty dance floor in the Tanny Club.
Yeah.
And it would look weird.
Yeah.
Do people throw money sometimes?
No, they threw things, but it wasn't money. Peanuts.
Did you just want attention?
I don't know what it was. Just felt good. Just felt good.
Right.
That's what dancing's about.
No, that wasn't the joy that you see on the woman's face in Flashdance. That was not what drove that. That was attention. You wanted to show off.
But I don't know if it was attention, because, like, who would you want attention from down there? Because it's not going to impress any girls, is it?
No, definitely not.
And the attention you'd get from the blokes is getting punched in the side of the head.
I see it as, right, in this domain, I'm not as cool as any of the other lads in here.
I wasn't as cool as any of the other lads in any of the domains.
And the ladies aren't going to want to have it off with me.
Fuck it, let's have a laugh.
Yes. I think that's generally been our life.
That's the tagline to our movie.
It really is.
I'm not as cool as the blokes. The girls won't have it off with me. Let's have a laugh. That's all that's left to do.
Someone might feel sorry for us. Oh, dear. So what? So you've gone 2 unlimited.
Yeah, and the other one from the shit club was Boys to Men, End of the Road, because that would always be the way, 10 to 2, wouldn't it? You'd be kind of like just slipping your ass around, just trying to find someone to have a cuddle.
It's as weird as that, isn't it? And for younger listeners, the erection section, or whatever you want to call it, was this thing where, especially in lots of kind of high street kind of clubs, wasn't it? It'd get to a certain time, not long before the lights come up, where they'd slow things down. Yeah. And you would walk up to a girl and go, do you want to have a dance?
You'd be shitting yourself as well.
Absolutely. And you'd be like, do you want to have a dance? And then, like, they'd go, yeah, all right.
No, they wouldn't.
No, they wouldn't. I think I reckon I went to that club, Pizzazz. I reckon I went 40 times, maybe. Like,
it's weird when you say that, for it to only be 40 times, because it feels like hundreds.
Yeah, but I reckon in reality it probably was about that.
We was going every week for a while, weren't we?
Yeah, like, and it felt, yeah, I can only really remember slow dancing 3 times, so that shows.
That's 2 more than me.
Did you only get 1 slow dance?
Yeah. Oh, it was brilliant.
Was that girl that said you look like some of a prick?
No, I fucking know.
Oh, dear. But and you would go up to a girl, wouldn't you, and just go, do you want to have a dance? And then if they said yeah, it almost felt like, well, they've just said yes to a snog.
Yeah.
And you would, like, literally, you can reach me by sailboat. And then by the time, like, you can reach me by aeroplane, you was literally...
You had a Boeing 747 in your pocket.
100%. In or trousers...
Could, or you could reach her by canoe.
But you would have, like, trousers on as well.
Yeah,
so you'd
chinos,
have to,
yeah.
Like, you'd have to try and really conceal it when, like, the lights come up at the end of the night.
That was wafty, wasn't it? When you kind of, like, didn't shake properly and you got a wet spot on your chinos.
Yeah.
You had to try and hide it under the ultraviolet light.
Do you remember the other slowies?
I just remember End of the Road.
Million Love Songs.
Oh, fucking hell. I mean, it's dire, isn't it?
Yeah. And remember this one? If only for tonight, don't be a stranger.
Yeah.
Dina Carroll.
Oh, was that Dina Carroll?
Yeah, yeah. That was the erection section 4, I remember.
Yeah.
Like, but generally...
I heard End of the Road on the radio... a couple of months ago, and it's really rapey.
Is it?
Have you heard it lately?
No, I hate that record.
Oh, well, I mean, like now, it's got to be close to being cancelled. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah.
That bit.
That just bit. Get out of your pants, mate. You're going to go off.
I hate that song so much.
It's so shit.
Oh, and do you know what annoys me more about that? I think it was on Motown, wasn't it? And I think, like, sometimes you'll get a Motown, like, compilation, and it's on there. Nah. And I just think, no.
It's just cheap to license these days.
Unbelievable. All right. So, have you got...
Oh, sorry. So, the song I was going to go for was Sheep on Drugs, 15 Minutes of Fame.
Oh, what a great record.
Do you know what? I heard it for the first time in probably over 10 years today.
Yeah.
And it is fucking mental.
That's got a siren, hasn't it? It's got an alarm at the beginning. Has it got a lot of bell ringing?
Oh, I don't know. It's just, like, really fucking out there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, try and explain Sheep on Drugs to people. I mean, you can listen to Dead Lee from Sheep on Drugs on this podcast. He guested a couple of years ago. I know that obviously we were fans and we'd go and watch them quite a lot.
Yeah.
And it was quite an experience. So for people that have no idea who Sheep on Drugs are, I mean, explain a little bit about what you can expect from a Sheep on Drugs performance and record.
Picture the Pet Shop Boys, but they're both on crack.
Yeah.
And at a gig, they're stripped half naked, covering themselves in spray paint and waving a gun around.
Occasionally firing it.
Without any tunes.
They didn't fair? Need tunes, though, did
no,
they?
No, they didn't need tunes because they were just... I mean, like, they were one of my fucking favourite bands to go and see.
Mm.
Like, I mean, it was sort of industrial sounding, wasn't it? But just really fucking in your face.
Terrifying.
Absolutely fucking terrifying. And he was a great front man.
Mm.
He would just cover himself in fucking spray paint and just wave this fucking gun around and threaten people in the audience. And you always sort of felt like when he threatened someone in the audience, they shut up because no one knew whether he would carry it through.
We'd often have a little drink and heckle. We never heckle Sheep on Drugs, did we?
Nah, it's just not worth it, is it?
He's got a gun. Okay, any more honourable mentions on that one?
From the alternative clubbing days, One Way by the Levellers was one that just always got played. And I'm sure, like, having done alternative clubs in all the years subsequent to that, you must be fucking sick of it, but...
I've got a weird relationship with that record. Like, I think it's great.
I heard it for the first time in, I would say, at least 20 years on the radio, and I goosebumps the fucking lot. And, you know, you're like, fucking hell. Like, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's just a great song.
I watched some footage of them headlining Glastonbury in probably, like, 91 or 90. And they come out, and obviously they look fucking crackers, because they're just at the height of that kind of second wave of crusty kind
they
of...
They ain't had a gentleman's wash lately, have they?
They haven't. And basically, they just come out, and, you know, they all look how the Levellers looked, or look. And it just starts with a didgeridoo. Just going... And then it goes, hey, jang, 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 it goes into it. And then when that sort of tribal drumming kicks in, it's almost like a breakbeat as well.
Yeah.
And I was watching it, and I was talking to one of the other DJs from Toothbrush watching it, and I just went, music's never going to be like that ever again. Look at that, headlining a festival. Look how mental what's going on is. And
do you know what? I don't think I realised at the time how punk as fuck the Levellers were.
Yeah.
I mean, like, completely. They just did... on the surface of things, they just fucking did what they wanted and did what they believed in and, like, you know, fucking fair play to them.
Absolutely. And the sentiments of One Way is wonderful.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? It's just got a lovely fucking message to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Any more?
Shame by Eat, which is one that I know... I probably maybe haven't even heard since, but it was such a big fucking song in Automatic at the Gas Club.
So good, so good. It's probably one that most listeners haven't heard of. Eat were a band fronted by a brilliantly named Ange Doolittle. That when that band split up, he joined a band called We Know Where You Live with the most of the members of the Wonder Stuff Without Miles, when Miles went on to form Vent 414, whatever they were called. But E is this just brilliant kind of indie guitar pop record, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's cracking. And again, I equate it with that club. You know,
yeah.
I bought it and I played in every club that, you know, me or we DJ'd in subsequently, and it never caught on like how I wanted it to, and I played it to death. But it's a belter of a single.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And like when it just reminds me of that time.
And when we think of that time and that club and going to Automatic, it was always a bit empty, wasn't it?
Yeah. But I don't know, I sort of think that's sort of what was good about it, because it sort of felt like you had a little bit of investment in it because it weren't fucking rammed and it weren't in a big place.
Yep.
Like, you know, and also you could go up and bug the DJ and he'd play like fucking Bedazzled and stuff, like early Doors.
Yeah, you could get the songs that no other indie club were going to play.
Yeah.
And like, because we put the hours in there, we'd get them early Doors, which was...
And they always had them as well.
Yeah. And it felt like, getting Bedazzled played was something that was never going to happen anywhere else, was it? It did feel really special. And obviously, shout out to Jeff Automatic, who obviously went on to have a really good sort of career in DJing. And there's a warm-up guy, Errol Olken.
Yeah. Like, I wonder what's happened to him now.
No idea. Let's go home. You got any more on that one?
Just Teen Spirit. One that was just always there. I mean, I weren't ever a big Nirvana fan, but like, you can't fucking underestimate the power of that record.
And so the impact of that band as well on the scenes that we were, involved in, I guess.
All of a sudden, like, all our little mates were fucking wearing check shirts with it and deliberately ripping their jeans.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Fishing. Just bent over and they just ripped. You made them holes yourself, you liar.
We had a mate who literally just come out one day with two identical scissor cuts in his knees on his jeans and claimed that, obviously being like teenage lads, you just ridicule every kind of possible statement that you make, fashion statements that your friends make. His answer was, I bent down fishing and they both ripped.
Yeah.
Like, must have been a cheap denim. Let's go home. Favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
That would have to be See You by Depeche Mode.
That's a good one, isn't it?
It's my favourite Depeche Mode song, and there's lots to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Any kind of almost made it on that?
It would probably be other Depeche Mode songs, if I'm honest. Enjoy the Silence. I'm trying to fucking think of. They've got lots of them. Leaving Silence, Get the Balance Right. Shake the Disease.
Shake the Disease come on the radio the other day.
That's what I was trying to fucking think of. But I was playing it forward. Playing it forward from the intro, trying to get the chorus.
And I hadn't heard it for years. And like, now you just think, I know every word to this.
Yeah.
Like, it's a cracker, but See You's perfect, isn't it?
I just think it's got that bittersweet, unrequited love thing, and like just the synths in it are just fucking top notch.
Yeah,
and it just sounds so innocent as well. Like, it's just the opposite of a contrived fucking marketed manufactured record. Just like pure fucking teenage innocence, brilliant.
But then I guess that's they were young innocent lads making music.
Oh, of course they look about fucking 12 in the video.
Yeah.
Like, and the video's all filmed in Woolworths. Like,
yeah,
it's a brilliant. I don't know about a brilliant video, but like completely of the era, and it really reminds me of like going in John Menzies.
Yeah.
Like, I quite like the girl who sort of works in John Menzies behind the record counter, and we're going there and kind of like to buy a record. And that.
Have you got anything by Level 42?
That's why it never happened.
Yeah, I mean, we're both big Depeche Mode fans, and I know that you lean more towards that kind of, because you're a fan of pop, the earlier stuff before it kind of went a bit dark.
It's like the Beatles, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, you know. But yeah, all right, well, look, this is when you get to play Tastemaker. And yeah, so for the last track, I'm going to ask you, please, to tell me a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear.
Did I put B-movie?
No.
I armed and awed about this.
Go on, but let's talk about B-movie, and I'll tell you what you chose.
I remember what I went with now. Yeah. Do you know what? I was owing and ahhing what to go with for this, but it was going to be something from, like, a kind of lost song from the 80s.
Yeah.
And so, Nowhere Girl by B-movie, I just think, is one of those fucking songs that should be up there with, like, Enola Gay and Don't You Want Me, just, you know, and I Ran by the Flock of Seagulls. Just one of them fucking classic 80s songs, but just don't seem to, you know, it didn't fucking, I don't think it charted at the time, and it's just a brilliant, brilliant fucking song. And
where did you hear that?
I was DJing in this 80s club up in Soho, which is like a weird fucking quirk of fate, and I ended up DJing in this 80s club in Soho, and one of the other DJs played it, and I'm like, fucking hell, what the fuck's that? And yeah, like, because that was always the weird thing, is like, I've always loved that sound of the early 80s so much that you sort of think you've heard everything. And so when something pops up and you haven't heard it,
yeah,
you know, it sort of knocks your socks off. Yeah, and it was like that with the new music album as well. That was another one that I kind of was going to toy with for this one. Like, that was something I didn't hear until, like, the late 90s or 2000. And, you know, they're famous for, like, Living by Numbers.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a stack of songs off that album, A to B, that are just, you know, just some of the best songs ever written. Best pop songs ever written for me.
Yeah.
But, but I ended up going with Gary Lestrange's CD Pimp.
Tell us about that.
I saw Gary Lestrange is an 80s artist character played by the Wayne Shepherd, who does Pedo Kennedy in The Inbetweeners.
Yeah.
And I saw him without knowing any backstory. I saw him up in Edinburgh one year doing this show called Beef Scarecrow, which was his difficult third album. And, you know, sort of went a bit proggy and a bit weird, but it was just, fucking, you know, it ticked all the fucking boxes for me, because that was before I'd sort of played Edinburgh myself, and I was up there, you know, just on a bit of a fact-finding mission for a few days, trying to work out how I was going to kind of get on there. And, yeah, I went to see his show Beef Scarecrow, and, you know, like, this is exactly what I want to be doing. It was fucking brilliant. But I found out he'd had two subsequent albums, and I think he'd won, like, Perrier Best Newcomer or something at the Edinburgh Fringe. But it's definitely, like, Gary Lestrange is something that seems to have gone completely under the comedy radar, because the first album, was it called Polaroid Suitcase? It's just, like, a perfect fucking pastiche of 80s pop done in around, like, the early 2000s. And each song, you know, like, there's one that's kind of taking off Gary Newman, another one that's taking off Soft Cell, and they're just so brilliant.
There's videos as well, isn't there?
There's videos as well. I would highly recommend just go and have a little look on YouTube for Gary Lestrange, but CD Pimp for me is just the... that it was off his second album, which weren't quite as consistent as the first one, but there's still some fucking... there's some crackers on there. And CD Pimp, I just think it's just bonkers, and just the best kind of comedy. Just don't take yourself too seriously, but he's based on something real, and he's just fucking ridiculous, and it's a really good song and a really good chorus.
Well, people can go and check out all the songs. I don't know if Gary Lestrange is on Spotify. We'll find out. If so, then it'll be added to the Spotify playlist of all the songs that we've spoken about. We'll try and find B-movie as well, and we'll throw some stuff on there, and obviously we'll throw some music by the Cunts on there as well, which then leads me on, before we start to wrap things up, what's happening?
Well, here's the thing. I toyed long and hard about whether...
I should say quickly, by the time this is out, it'll be happening, hopefully. It should be out, because...
Go on the internet, download it! So I toyed long and hard with, after Boris Johnson Is a Fucking Cunt hit the charts last year.
Yeah.
I've toyed long and hard with whether to do it again this year, because he is still there, and I definitely don't think he's any less of a cunt than last year with all the fucking, you know, just all the sleaze and fucking lies, and just thinking whatever he says makes it true. It's just, yeah, I just want him fucking gone. And I think, you know, for the people that say, oh, you did it last year, why are you doing it again? Like, he's a big fucking tree, and one chop don't bring him down. You just have to fucking keep chopping. And so we've recorded a song called Boris Johnson is Still a Fucking Cunt. It's available now. There's various versions of it. Each version you buy counts towards the charts. And so, like, if you go and buy five versions of it, that'll count as five sales in the charts. And there's a playlist on the website, borisjohnson.info, a 24-hour Spotify playlist. I'm having to make all this up because I haven't done it yet, but it will all be there by the time people hear this.
So to break down what that means in regards to it, so when people go to the website and there's a 24-hour playlist, so that's on like Spotify or something like that, and then basically turn the volume down if you don't want to listen to it for a whole day and just press play, and then that'll constantly just play it, and that'll all count as streams, and it'll all go into to getting you up the charts.
Yeah, that's what we did last year. We set up a 24-hour Spotify playlist. Because the song's only a minute long, it gets 60 plays every minute.
Yeah.
60 plays every hour that you have it on. And so people just kind of streamed it 24 hours for the 7 days just with the sound down. And it ended up with like 7 million streams, and it got it to number 5 in the charts with that and the sales. And I think, you know, fuck it. Just let's get him gone and see what fucking lies after him. We'll see who lies after him.
Absolutely. And do you know what? Like, it's an absolute joy to talk about records with you and talk about everything that you've done and everything that you're still doing, because it still impresses me, excites me, and inspires me. And yeah, and
no, the feeling's mutual. What that'd be.
And like, no, it's just
wally about it, but no.
But no, it, you know, when I hear that you're going to do these things, when you come around and go, I've got this idea, I think, oh, for fuck's sake, mate, you're going to get in so much trouble. And like, you're just going, it's a laugh, though, isn't it? And I just think, yeah, it's a massive laugh. It's a really good idea. And the world needs more people with that mentality. Go stream it. Go buy it. Website, where's the best place to go for everything I need to know?
BorisJohnson.info. That's the one.
Bang. I'll add it on the show notes for this. So go, if you've forgotten that and you need a little one-stop shop, then go to the show notes on the podcast you're listening to right now, and it will have that link. Cunt, thank you.
Thanks, Roy. Nice one.
Stuart on this podcast.
Oh, sorry, mate.
There you go. Little catch-up with me best mate. Oh, that was lovely. Really, really enjoyed it. You know, got to have a drink with me mate, and I was surprised at some of the song choices. And yeah, it is strange. You know, you grow up so close to someone for so long, and you know, we're both obviously very passionate about music, but do have very different sort of tastes in what we listen to. You know, there's a common thread in we love a bit of 80s pop, but yeah, it was lovely to kind of explore, you know, their musical tastes and yeah, get a little snapshot and learn a few things that, you know, maybe I didn't know about him. So, as mentioned at the end of the podcast, go check out the show notes, go check out the website, and go and get behind that campaign. And let's just have a bit of fun and see what we can do with the Christmas charts. And if we can get that right up there again, oh, how mental and brilliant would that be? As mentioned as well at the beginning, go check out Cunt on Pip's podcast this week. That's a great listen. I'll be back next time. In the meantime, get yourself over at Spotify and start streaming that track. And I'll see you next time. Thanks again. Bye-bye. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Keep me, Stu Whippin.